Hi, everyone. I am so excited to welcome you again today to At Home with Sally. And we are thrilled about the podcast series that we're doing on Girls Club. And we hope that you'll be able to get your own copy of this. Our desire in this series is to open the hearts and stories of women that we admire and respect. And in light of that, we are so thrilled about someone who's joining us today in our podcast. And her name is Karen Swallow Pryor. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
We're thrilled to have you here, and I have Joy here today.
Hello.
And for those of you who are wondering, Sarah is already back in Oxford, and so she's not able to do these podcasts with us, but we hope that you'll enjoy all that we're going to be doing in the next couple of weeks.
All right, so let me provide a brief introduction to Karen, and then we'll turn it over to you. I discovered Karen through Twitter, actually. That's been a strange source of delight in my life. I've discovered many people that whose thoughts I enjoyed, and Karen is always a witty and wise presence on the internet, and through that, I discovered that she is a professor of English at Liberty University, and that she's written several books that I actually realized I recognized, or that we had. My mom realized that she had her book. Is it Fierce Convictions, Karen? Is that the name of it?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I really enjoyed it. I got it on my Audible and listened to it when we were in Oxford this fall.
And then we realized after we had initiated this interview, we realized that you had that on your Audible.
Yeah.
And then also, she recently released her book. It's called Reading Well, correct?
On Reading Well.
And that's on kind of virtue and literature and the way that it can help us develop virtues for life. And it was fun because Sarah, my sister, also released her book, Book Girl, which is about kind of developing your soul and your mind through books. And then Anne Vogel also released, I can't remember what hers was called, but it was all
these, I'd rather be reading.
And the chances of those being released all at the same time.
Yeah.
Delightful.
But yeah, it was so fun to see three passionate women speaking about the virtue we can develop through literature. So that's a brief introduction to Karen. Why don't I let you say a little more about yourself before we dive in today?
Sure. I do spend way too much time on Twitter, as you alluded to, but you know, Twitter has become, I think, and can be a force for good, a force for sharing good ideas and prompting thought and prompting relationships, like we're talking about today. But that's one of the things to think about, is the difference between, you know, these kinds of online connections and real life flesh and blood friendships. So that's something I think about a lot and I've written about, and so I'm excited to be here talking with you about that today.
Great. And did you grow up in Virginia, or did you just move there for a job?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually was born and raised in the state of Maine.
Oh.
And yeah, so I think it formed my character a great deal. It's such a wild, wonderful, rugged place. And I moved with my family to Western New York when I was in high school, went to school there, and then moved to Virginia when I got the job at Liberty University, and I've been here almost 20 years. And as much as I love the beautiful Northeast, the warm weather has has grown on me, and I do love Virginia. It's God's country.
Oh, it's so beautiful. We've taken many trips there, and we just love it, too. Well, I have to tell you that I am thrilled that you're on today, too, because I feel like, as a woman who has been a professor for 20 years and you've been through a journey of probably many friendships, we were wanting to have mature, wise people, so we're expecting lots from you.
Oh dear.
No,
but set the standard high.
No, we have women, you know, who are very young and more seasoned as you and I are, so I'm looking so forward to hearing your stories and hearing some of what you have to say. Yeah.
So I thought I would begin us today. We'll kind of segue into the main topics we're going to talk about. But I wanted to start with reading this passage from John, because something that my mom and I have talked about, and that I've seen you write about as well, Karen, is that oftentimes friendship is talked about, often particularly between women, as something that's kind of sweet and kind of, you know, lovely but unimportant, maybe. And I would really like to combat that by saying that friendship is a really central part of what God calls us to. And this has really struck me this year. In Jesus' final kind of message that he gives to his friends in John 15 before he goes to the cross, one of the kind of climaxes of the before the priestly prayer is that he says to them, I no longer call you servants, because a master does not confide in his servants. Now you are my friends, since I have told you everything the Father has told me. And there's this kind of switch of Jesus looking at his disciples as friends, and this becomes a really central element of what it is to be called a Christian, is to be friends with God, but also to be friends with one another, working towards purposes for the kingdom. And I think that being at the very center of Jesus' message about kind of what we become as we become Christians gives friendship this kind of significance, that it's not something light, that it's not something unimportant, but that it's a really central part of what we're called to. It will keep us faithful in life. It will become a source of good for the world. And so I just kind of wanted to begin setting that tone. And with that, I thought I would just begin by a more kind of personal thing. We wanted to ask you, what is a friendship in your life that has been significant, that's shaped your character, that's shaped who you are? What was it about that friendship? What was it about that person? Just kind of dive in, say whatever you want to around that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I have several best friends, very, very postmodern of me. But it is hard to, pick just one, one best friend, because I think friends, they're all different and they fulfill different needs and wants and desires in our lives. But I would say that the friend that I've had the longest, that I've been the closest to, is someone that actually we were set up. We had a mutual friend. We were both in graduate school, so I was in my PhD program, she was in her master's program. We were both believers, attending a very secular, liberal university that was hostile to Christianity. And so a mutual friend knew both of us and knew that we had in common not only our faith, but our love of the life of the mind, and also just feeling isolated in this university setting. So a friend of ours introduced us, thinking that we would hit it off, and we did. And that's about 30 years ago. Yes. And so we actually went, lived in the same city and went to the same university for a number of years and became best friends. And then I moved away to take this job that I have now, and it was so painful. I'll never forget the day that we were saying goodbye to each other. And it was so hard, because I'd been for so long in my life as an adult without close girlfriends. And then, you know, the Lord is so amazing, because you know what he did? The next year my friend got a job at my university.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, what a gift.
And I'll just fast forward, that lasted just a few years. She had to go on to get another degree, and so it's been a long distance friendship now for over a decade. But we still remain close, and that's because we continue to invest in phone calls and visits. We have to work at it more, but that bond that sewed us together in the beginning, our common intellectual life and faith life, even from a distance, has kept us knitted together, even though it's taken a lot more work and investment.
I love that story, because I think that you're bringing up something that a lot of people need to know, that one of the purposes to me of friendship in my own life has been that people have kept me close to the Lord, because I think that it can be lonely and isolated, especially in a university setting, for a lot of women that are listening to us today, or just wherever they are, they can feel like they have their ideals all by themselves in a secular culture. And so I love that. That's what happened to me too. I found a wonderful friend in the midst of being in communist countries working together. And it knit our hearts together, because we helped each other continue to stay fast in our faith. That's a beautiful story.
And I will say, too, that I'm in my PhD program right now, and I had a very similar experience during my first year in my master's, because I was in Scotland, and being in Scotland, starting a PhD program or a master's program, there's this real danger of isolation, and I think that's very prevalent in especially people who are at kind of more secular universities. But I ended up finding these three girls. We ended up calling ourselves the tribe, and kind of out of necessity, we bonded together because we needed people to figure out graduate school, to figure out how to buy something at a Scottish grocery store. But we bonded together, and now we've all kind of spread to the four winds, but I'm early on in that stage of friendship, but I just talked to one of them last night. We still encourage each other. And I think that being able to be bonded around a common faith, but also a common vision for life, whatever that is, you know, for us, that was graduate school, the life of the mind, but for other people, it might be something else.
Well, I love what you said, Karen, about that you call each other, that you're intentional. How do you make that happen in a busy life? Is it something that you prioritize and plan, or?
It has then become sort of a habit. For a long time, it was weekly phone calls. Then my life got busier. I was traveling more, and so if we skip a few weeks, we really just make that extra effort to when we're both at home to make that phone call. And I'm a multitasker because I'm so busy. So oftentimes, I'll have my phone on and I'll have my headphones in and I'll use that time to wash the dishes or fold laundry or something like that. Yeah. And so we can talk for an hour or sometimes 2 hours and I'm, just getting things done. And I think we're both doing that. And so it's almost like she's here and we're just sitting chatting, through our normal lives because we do that so often.
I feel like that's something I've thought about is, you get to a point with some friends when you've kind of made a commitment in your heart in some way to them. And so you just have this kind of expectation that even if you haven't talked for a while, that you'll always come back to that place. And you just kind of know that will be a part of your life, even if you skip a few weeks, And I think that's a good place for a friendship to come.
Yeah. I once heard... go ahead.
I'd like to add one element of this friendship, too, is my friend is single. She's never been married. And, of course, I'm married very young. And at times when it has been a struggle just because I've been so busy, part of what has helped me to remain committed is my growing awareness that the church really needs to minister more to singles because so much is oriented toward family. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of older single friends, and I've been reading a lot more of the kinds of things that they're writing about how it's not even necessarily on purpose, but how the church has formed so many of its programs and rituals and emphases around families that and singles often get left out, and we have to be intentional about making them part of our families. And so I want to be there for my friend who doesn't have that family.
I love that. One of the first stories I share in the book is becoming a very close friend with one of my best friends for life in Poland when we were missionaries there, and she is also single, and we have kept up, we write, we call, we make trips every year, but also I didn't realize that I wasn't going to have a lot of family connections when we moved 19 times, 7 times internationally, and so she has been an auntie to my children, she is part of our family. I don't know what I would have done without her.
Well, and I think that she is a gift to us, and that I had the sense of having a family, even though we moved so much and weren't connected with our extended family. But I hope also that, kind of like you're saying, that we could also be a gift to her in the sense of making a place for her, making room that often is not made for our friends who are single.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me to what I was going to ask you about next. I really feel like I've been really blessed. Our family's been blessed because we have been in ministry, cultivated ministry for many years, and I think that sometimes the best friendships are made when you are working towards the same goal or you have something in common. And I'm taking a quote out of the book. It says, "What many in our culture don't understand and many more forget is that a relationship with Christ is best taught through long-term personal relationships with someone who know him well and reflect him personally in all the moments of their lives." And so I feel like I wanted to ask you, how do people cultivate kingdom relationships? Because I feel like one of the really most of my closest friends have come through all of us working together in ministry or in teaching or hosting conferences or whatever we do. And I wonder if that's something that you could speak to, because I feel like sometimes women don't know where to start. And I think, start by seeking out a place that has a purpose or an accountability group that mm-hmm. has something to do that's close to your heart.
And I will just add to that, it's kind of like the passage I read, that part of the purpose, I think, the telos, the end goal of friendship, shouldn't just be our own emotional satisfaction, which is really important, but also how it becomes that kind of kingdom friendship, something mm-hmm. that makes a difference in the world. So,
do you have any ideas on that, or maybe even how you cultivate friendships where you are as a professor?
Yes, I mean, that speaks to my own experience. I mean, my closest friends here now for the past 10 or 15 years are, you know, have a group of friends, there are four of us, and we all work together. Mm-hmm. We all teach together at Liberty, and that is obviously a strong common bond. And I know that many people who work in places or with people that they would not necessarily, you know,
hang out
with after work. And mm-hmm. So I do count it as a blessing that I have that, because we are united in this, you know, this ministry that we do, because teaching at a Christian university, it is a job, but it's also a ministry. So we have that in common. But then we also, you know, we have in common our outside interests, like going to the theater and going to movies, and mm-hmm. we do all those things together quite regularly. And yet, it's not just about the fun things, because inevitably when we get together, we're talking about our ministry together at the school and how we're serving our students and problems that we're having. And so this has been, you know, a strong bond of friendship that's developed within this group over the past decade or more. There's just something different about that, because we're working together on this common vision for our life and ministry. And you don't have to be a professional woman for this to be true. I think this is why, you know, moms of young children also, that's a ministry. And so when they get together for their children's play dates, but also for them to be together, I think that's really important. And it's an important bond, and important to realize that that's a ministry as well, and that's something that you can help one another through as you go through that stage of life.
I think that I used to think that if I was going to start a group or have friends over, that my house needed to be perfect, or I needed to be perfect. And what I found is that I've always had to start every group I've ever been involved in terms of a Bible study, because I was always the new kid on the block. But I found that when women would come over, they would go, "Oh, I'm so glad your house has, you know, problems as well." And I just think that starting groups, joining groups, being involved in a group, I think that I oftentimes, in the moves with all that we were doing, I didn't realize how much I needed to be with someone. Mm-hmm. And then when I would ask someone out for coffee or say, "Would you like to study this book with me, or would you like to do whatever?" I would find my heart strangely warmed.
okay, Wesley.
You know, I know. I know we were talking about that the other night. But I would realize that we need love like we need oxygen. We need love from people. Mm-hmm. We need support from people.
And something else I'll add that I was thinking about as you were talking is, I think maybe sometimes it can be foreign to some people to think about their friendships being a part of ministry. But I think that part of what you're saying is that also comes with how you view your own life and how you view your own purpose. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're saying, you see your job as a ministry. And but that could also be the same with mothers. And so thinking of mothers or
students,
or students with whatever that is, it can be mm-hmm. your space of serving the Lord, of helping other people. And kind of that comes not only with stages in life, but also with your own viewpoint, how you consider your life. And I feel like there's such a great satisfaction to me in friendships where you feel like you have done or loved or worked together. Do you know what I mean? There's kind of there's just satisfaction in that.
I want to ask you a question in light of that. As a professor, you work with women students all the time. I bet there are a lot of things that you've noticed just by working with young women. What are some of the things that you've seen in their lives that are strengths or weaknesses, or how do you see them developing friendships as important to their flourishing in school?
That's a good question. I mean, I do talk to students a lot and about these kinds of things. And I think, of course, I talk more to female students. And so one of the things that I've noticed happens a lot is that young women in particular can find it hard to form deep, intimate relationships with other young women.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is, you know, it's the stage of life. There are so many changes going on, and, mm-hmm. and young people are moving around for school and for career, and they don't have roots oftentimes. That's just part of the nature of that stage of life. But there's also, I think, young women are fragile, they're developing, mm-hmm. they're insecure, mm-hmm. and all of those things factor into the difficulty that most young women have in being friends with other young women because of competitiveness and insecurity. And so oftentimes they will just simply not do the hard work that it takes to make friends, mm-hmm. or get hurt too easily, or give up too easily, mm-hmm. or just hang out with the guys, which they'll tell me, you know, it's oh, I just get along with guys better. And my response is, well, guess what? That's how God made us. And we're supposed to, there is a dynamic between men and women that God created, which is, you know, doesn't mean we're supposed to have them as our best bosom buddies. And so I guess the word that I would offer to anyone listening who maybe fits that description is, yes, friendship is hard, and it's even harder when you're younger because of all of these factors, yet it's still important to keep trying, keep investing, don't give up, don't force things. Sometimes, you know, it's just there's a fit or there's not a fit, and if someone that you'd like to be friends with doesn't warm up to it, just that's okay. Be okay with that, and keep socializing and making overtures to other women, and eventually you'll find your people. Mm-hmm. And they may not last for life because life changes, but those skills and habits that form you as you attempt to invest will stay with you even as relationships change. Mm-hmm. Those that desire and that willingness to invest will be part of you even if your friends and life situations change.
You know, I want to ask you another question. I feel like there are kind of some key things to being a good friend. Like, I think that...
yeah, it's kind of a skill you develop.
Yeah.
A muscle you exercise.
Yes.
Words of encouragement. I think if we perceive ourselves to be givers and kind of say that's what a friend is, I am a person that loves for people to affirm me or say, I'm so glad to see you, or it's so much fun to be together, or whatever. What are some of those things that have built your friendship? Sounds like you're a real friend-oriented person. And what are some things that are meaningful to you that you feel like help you draw closer to someone? I'm kind of a, as you are, a public figure, so to speak. But at heart, I'm kind of shy. And so when people actually initiate to me and ask me a question, how are you doing? What's going on? How can I pray for you? I really appreciate it because I'm not used to people asking me about my personal needs. What are some things that you think help develop friendships in your mind?
Well, for me, I most of my friends are like me in the sense that they have to be pretty transparent, forward-speaking, blunt. They don't tiptoe around. They're not shy to say things. We can make fun of each other and be honest about our roles and our relationship. Like, everyone knows I'm kind of the bossy one. We're all bossy, but I always
but you're the champion.
And you know, so we're honest about our strengths and weaknesses, and we don't pussyfoot around, I guess. And not everyone's like that, but I realize that these are the things that draw me to other people. And I do have, you know, I have few very close friends, but they last for a lifetime. I'm very loyal and committed. And when that's two-sided, it works. I mean, there have been at least two good friendships in my life where I kept investing, and it just really, it didn't work, and that's fine. I finally gave up. That's fine. It takes time. That's the thing that it can't be forced. It takes
patience.
Time and experience and patience, yes.
I think it's funny, I will add this, and then I'm going to ask you about something different, but I have been struck, as we've written about this, talked about this, how often people use language of dating when it comes to making friendships, in that it requires initiation. It's a source of our own insecurities, but also that you can kind of, get better at it, that eventually you do commit to people. And that's just something that has struck me and is amusing to me. But I actually think that it's a helpful analogy, because we think really intentionally about dating, but we don't often think as intentionally as we should about friendship. So I think that's a useful kind of analogy.
And I do think in the end, we all, just what you said, we want to be able to be with somebody who knows us and loves us as we are.
Yeah.
And we can...
And not everybody's going to be that person.
Yeah, and it takes a while to develop that kind of relationship. But I've noticed that a lot of my friends are different, very different than I would have thought when I first met them. You know, different personalities.
And you have to give time to see that blossom.
They are not my Myers-Briggs type. So.
Yeah, I know. I think patience is one of the virtues of friendship, being able to just wait and see and invest.
And be committed. Just say, I'm going to be committed to this.
Yeah, once you know it's the right thing. So I wanted to ask you, kind of shifting moods a little bit, about what it looks like to have friendships in the challenges of life. We have all heard the passage in Ecclesiastes when it says, for two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. But if either of them falls, the other will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls, and there is no one to lift him up. And I think that one of the ways I felt most loved in my life was when I've walked through challenges and been supported. And one of the most wounding things is to walk through challenges without friends. Yeah. So what do you, have you had times in your life, I know there were pretty significant challenges this year for you, where friends have played that role for you, of supporting you through challenges? Or what do you think it looks like to become a friend who supports others through challenges?
And tell us your story.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the challenge that you're referring to anyone who might not know is that last May, I was walking in downtown Nashville, and I got hit by a bus.
My goodness, how does one get hit by a bus?
I mean, people say, I feel like I got hit by a bus, but nobody actually gets hit
by a bus. No, I actually did. Apparently, I stepped into a crosswalk and did not have the right of way. And
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I did not see the bus until it was hitting me.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Ugh. Yeah, so, but the Lord preserved my life and my limbs. I'm so thankful. And but I spent 8 days in Vanderbilt Hospital, and then 3 months unable to walk. And so I was overwhelmed by the support and love that my friends showed me. And of course, for anyone who followed it, I mean, there was lots on social media and lots of tweets and lots of cards and a lot of people. I felt loved by a lot of people around the world. But in terms of my real life, flesh and blood, close friends, they were really there for me. I had one friend, one husband and wife who live in my town, who surprised me by driving my elderly mother, who doesn't drive. They drove 9 hours to bring my mom to the hospital to visit me. Because my husband, you know, he was there. He had to come and right away. And so my friends drove my mom out to spend the night and stay with me.
How sweet. That is so I'll come see you, Joy.
And then then when I got home, my friends who came and cooked, my best childhood friend, who I haven't mentioned yet, we've been best friends. I told you I had many best friends since 7th or 8th grade. She still lives in Maine, and she was on a plane out here, spent days here helping me, weeding my garden, doing housework. It was just, I'm a person who has not needed much in terms of physical help. And so it was very humbling to be in that position, but just overwhelming to see my friends be there for me in the hard ways, be there physically with their hands and feet doing things and spending time with me. And when I was well enough, taking me to the movies in a wheelchair.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. You must have loved well to have so many people who loved you back. I think that is so precious.
Yeah. You
know, it was a beautiful thing.
Are you okay now? Do you have any?
I am. I am back to running and back to the gym. I'm getting my strength back. So I'm very, very thankful.
I'm so glad that you're okay. I remember seeing that on Twitter and just not even believing it. But I think it's amazing when you see friends come through in moments like that of giving not just relationally, but giving themselves and really kind of, there is a cost to that of going to being with somebody physically, going to just be there and not, it's not about wise words. It's not about necessarily, it's about being with someone, about taking care of them in very practical ways and giving the gift of your presence.
Well, Karen, is there any last, just last something in your heart that you would say to all these precious ones out there that you would encourage them in light of looking back over your life and seeing how important friendships were, that how to prioritize it, or just anything about friendship that they might remember?
Well, I just want to echo something that both of you said when Joy read the passage about Jesus having friends and how important they are. And Sally, you said something later on about how friendships are like oxygen. In my book on Reading Well, I have a chapter on love, and I think it didn't occur to me until after I wrote the book that most people picking up the book probably thought that I was writing about romantic love or erotic love. But this chapter is actually about friendship. And one of the, one of the quotes, because I draw heavily on Aristotle and Aquinas throughout the book, but one of the quotes from Aristotle that I open this chapter with, which I love, is that Aristotle says that friendship is an absolute necessity in life. And I think our culture is oriented toward thinking about, romantic relationships and having to, we need to find that our soulmate and so forth. And I've been married for 33 years. I love marriage. But I want to say that our culture is a little bit distorted and putting so much emphasis on that and not enough, I think, on friendship. God created us to be social creatures, His kingdom is based on, on the friendships that that are described in the Bible that you, as you read, Joy. And so we really do need to think more deeply or intentionally about friendships.
Oh, thank you. That's beautiful. I think Joy has even mentioned that quotation along the way, and I'd forgotten it from Aristotle.
We were talking about, a few podcasts ago, we were talking about how Aristotle and many others have seen that the peak of being a human is being in friendship, being in relationship, being faithful to that. And I want to recover that vision, and I hope that in some way, as we're dwelling on this together through these podcasts, through the book, that people will start to think about that. Karen, where can we send them to find your book, to find out more about you? Before I close, where could they find your work?
Sure. The easiest place is my website, which is KarenSwallowPryor.com. And as I mentioned before, it's very easy to find me on Twitter. Too easy.
And she's lovely to follow.
Pryor.
Yes.
Well, I love Twitter, so
me too. Remind
me there.
I love it more than I should. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Karen. I'm just going to close us in prayer. And thank you so much for the wisdom you shared. And I hope that people can take this and think about it, chew on it, and apply it to their lives.
Thank you for taking the time. It just means so much to us.
Oh, I enjoyed it so much. It was an honor to be on with you.
Great. All right. I'll close us in prayer. Lord, thank you for this time that we've been able to have to share stories, to share really the stories of your faithfulness that we have experienced through the hands and love of others. I just pray that for every person that's listening to this, that they would catch a glimpse of the richness of the friendship that you desire for us, that you desire for us to be friends with you, and out of that friendship with you, to develop close, faithful friendships that inspire us to be wise, to be godly, and to love others. I just pray you bless all these women, give them ideas about how to cultivate those friendships so that they can see them and cultivate closeness, and that they would be able to flourish in the community that you long for us to have. We love you, Lord, and give this time to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Karen.
Have a wonderful new year.
Happy New Year to you. This was great. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.